All right, it is that time once again. Actually, I've never really said this because this is not the normal time of this show, but this is still PGA Live Before Lock from awesomeo.com. It's not the night edition. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to dive into everything Palmetto Championship related. And it's the same crew. I am Ben Reza. That is Eric Lindquist. Where are you right now?
I am in the lovely town of Wichita, Kansas, home of the Shocker Classic. I got disqualified. The one time I've ever been disqualified from a golf tournament in my entire life was when I was 17 years old in Wichita, Kansas. And I think I stayed at the same hotel that I got put up here by American Airlines, which, by the way, do not fly American Airlines. I'm in Wichita, Kansas, out of the middle of nowhere. I tried to get to South Dakota. I was supposed to be there Tuesday morning. Somehow I am in Wichita on Wednesday afternoon. So such is life. We move on. Big golf tournament to talk about this week.
Yeah, listen, I mean, the reality of the situation is the U.S. Open is on deck. And this is a unique golf tournament, if nothing else. So is it the most prestigious? Is it the strongest field? No, but there's a lot of money up for grabs. There's some lesser known names. And sometimes that's all we need to kind of find an edge. So that's what we're going to try to do today. So let's get right into it before you fall asleep. I know you're running on fumes, no pun intended. We're going to start how we always do: waves, weather, and withdraws. So everything looks pretty standard for me. They are expecting a bunch of rain. I haven't seen anything with the wind, though. And let's start there. Do you see anything right off the bat that could be concerning on a wind situation?
No, and it's a spot where you might be trying to factor that in. Maybe you do a little bit of it anyway and hope that it works out that way. I think that's something that I've been trying to do, maybe even a little bit more without even trying. But specifically, if you can target, if you like golfers, you're going to like certain golfers in the morning and the afternoon. Maybe pairing a couple of them together in a couple lineups. That is not the worst way to go about it. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, always if you're building, you know, a lot of teams and you're talking about a GPP mindset, I say this every week, there's stuff that can happen during the tournament that could give you an edge that, you, of course, you can't plan for. But all in all, I'm not going to bump guys up or down depending on where they're playing. I'm going to keep it pretty simple. But the other wrinkle this week is, I guess, is attached to the withdraw component, but it's just the situation that we've had early in the week. This is U.S. Open qualifier week, so we've had dozens and dozens of players in this field, play in those qualifiers at various parts of the country. It's a little different. And I wanted to kind of ask you that. I mean, you're obviously a golfer. Do you worry about guys in terms of burnout? Do you worry about guys who were qualified, that did qualify, that maybe they pull out of the event? What do you make of all the noise we have here?
I mean, I buried the lead. Chris Baker from Iowa State gets through the 36. My boy. So my college teammate, the guy I did my recruiting trip with my sophomore year, I mean, he was the stud, probably the best golfer I played with day in, day out my entire life. But Chris Baker qualified for the U.S. Open. So best of luck, his first major championship. Have fun at Torrey, a place where he's actually made some cuts in the past. So I'm excited to go watch him out there. But that being said, 36 holes on a Monday, these guys play golf so much. And maybe it's a little bit of an extra boost, but 36 holes isn't like that crazy for some of these guys. They're on a golf course every single day preparing as is. Sure, it's a different mindset trying to win a golf tournament, but most of these places, like, they're not tour caliber spots that they're going to play these 36 hole qualifiers at. It's not like a crazy mental grind for most of them. Yeah, it can maybe be a little bit more exertion, but I'm not factoring in like whatsoever.
The only other question I want to ask you on that front. So you say maybe the holes themselves aren't a grind, but do you think a guy, and it's hard to get into the mindset because a lot of players are in different points in their careers and whatnot, but someone like Chris Baker even, do you think he has one eye on Torrey now and he's not nearly as focused on Congaree and the Palmetto? Or do you think, all right, he's playing well, that's a boost to him in a week like this?
I mean, I hope not, because the goal for a lot of those guys who, like, JT Poston has a tour win at least, and so I think he's locked in. So he was taking net jets back and forth to go play his 36 hole qualifier and get to the golf course. He's ready to rock. I'm not playing JT Poston this week. I wouldn't do that to you right off the bat. But
again,
I know, again, yeah, no, I'm a sicko. It's whatever. I just like his name. That's what it is. But I think, yeah, there's a little bit where you got to think, yeah, they're looking forward to their first major. They're getting psyched up for that. But getting your tour card and solidifying your status on the PGA Tour has to be a priority for all of these dudes for the most part. And if you're playing in 36-hole qualifying, you're more than likely in that middle fringe territory. You're not a top 50 player exempt in the world for the tournament. You're probably grinding more tour events where you have to finish well in order to keep boosting your status or bolstering your status. So I think that there's probably something where they're looking forward to it, but I have more concerns with that with a guy like Dustin Johnson or Brooks Koepka than I do for somebody like Chris Baker or JT Poston, who, you know, like, what are they playing for up top?
Yeah. And that's something certainly we're going to be talking about, because this is in South Carolina. Torrey is, of course, in California. It's not the easiest transition, but there are some big names here, and we're going to get to them in a second. I do want to talk about the course first, but before I do that, I want to talk about our sponsor, the show that you were just doing, our friends at Monkey Knife Fight. And if you have not been over there, they're player prop based contest, easy to play, not a huge time commitment, and all the sports that you could want: NBA, UFC, PGA, esports, soccer. We got the Euros coming up, and of course, the NFL will be here soon enough. To get started, go to monkeyknifefight.com, choose your game, your contest type, your buy-in level, and obviously, if you are a new depositor, we've got a promo code for you, promo code AWESOMO. You are going to be able to get a deposit bonus of up to $100 when you sign up with that promo code AWESOMO. So no reason not to do that. They've got some fun props. I did the video. You were in the air yesterday. I hopped in, and it was a fun time talking about those NBA props, rapid fire, a lot of different types of games they've got over there. So definitely worth checking out. But as we move on here to the new venue, rarely on the PGA Tour do we get a new course, but this week we do have one with Kongregate. It's a long par 71. So I kind of just want to give you the floor. Generally, what do you do when you see a course that we have no history for, we've not seen in competition?
Grass type. You have grass type that you can break certain players down by. I think that kind of is where I start with. I look at regional players and kind of the way that they play around the area, other like courses, South Carolina, looking around at some seaside players, looking at just kind of the way that we can assume this golf course is going to be. I think there was a show that you've guested in on many times that you crush with, and we've all kind of looked at the same material where we can break it down and say, I think the golf course is going to play this way. But looking forward to trying to find different takes for how it might play a little bit differently, grouping players, as you sharply point out every single week, by skill set, by skill type, looking at who the bombers are. Because if this ends up being something where it plays a little bit longer, if we get rain or have some stuff work out, that can be a huge edge to just be targeting some of those guys up top and moving on with your lineups. But then there's also those guys where if it's as wide open as what it does look like it is on this golf course, you have some wide 30, 40, 50 yard wide fairways, you could be looking at an iron specialty kind of game where we're just looking at all of those guys who have been peering it with their irons lately and targeting birdies.
It does seem like like most courses, there's going to be ball striker elements to it. It's pretty long, but it's supposed to play firm and fast. It's got a links element. That's what I've been seeing. That's what I've been reading, that, you know, there's not a ton. It's kind of those waste areas, but you know, you can kind of navigate it around. You can take it over a lot of the trouble if you want, or you can lay back and you may have some longer shots in. There's three par fours that are over 500 yards on this course. It's a unique setup. I can't imagine it honestly plays overly difficult. That's just a hunch. But I just, the week before US Open, I cannot see them setting up a really brutal test of golf. So I think birdies will be out there. What do you think on that front?
Yeah, I think if last week or what was it, 2 weeks ago, I mean, I feel like we've been targeting birdies a little bit more. Some of these courses haven't been playing as difficult as what it would seem. So I'm right there with you where, you know, they're getting ready for the grind of it. And it just seems like I feel like if it were set up very difficult and people were talking about that, we would have heard it by now. And I haven't heard it from any of the tour players or seen it on Twitter, scouring through everything. So I think you're onto something where we're looking at 18 to 22 under kind of being the number.
Yeah. Again, I don't see, barring, of course, crazy wind, and that's unexpected, this really causing a ton of problems. You're going to be able to score. And obviously, if you're not hitting it well, you're going to struggle. It's a long course. There's no doubt. It's not like there's hazards, there's water. You can get into trouble here. But I think all in all, give me the ball strikers, Bermuda putters, if you want to look at that. Kind of like some Quail Hollow elements. I did look at some of the European courses. not a ton to take away. I'm just going to kind of play it pretty straight up this week, evaluate the players, and see what we get. So are you ready to evaluate the players? You want to dive into this thing?
Let's get to work.
All right. We got DJ. We got Brooks. That's all we got. Only two players. We got Fitzy. We got Hatton. There is only four north of 10K. There's two in on the 11s, two in the 10s. So I guess, you know, in a field like this where depth is an issue, are you looking to go to the best available players here? Or do you say, you know what, as you mentioned off the top, why are these guys even here?
Why are they here? They're here to ruin our lives, I think, is what they're here to do. I have my apprehension about both. With DJ, it has more to do with current form than it does anything else. These are the kind of fields where DJ, though, you can basically throw it out and say, like, he goes out and dominates these types of fields. But I don't know. I'm not going to have much. I'm going to have very, very little of him and Brooks Koepka at the top end. I don't know why they're out here, but I guess they're here. And, you know, if they go out and shoot a couple of deep numbers, why wouldn't they go out and try to win a PGA Tour golf tournament, add to their resume, have a piece where, you know, DJ's from the area or from South Carolina. Like, I get where we're getting at with him. Brooks Koepka, I don't see it at all. Why I would want to be going that direction. Obviously played much, much better at a Seaside South Carolina course, so to speak. So I think that second at the PGA might have a lot of people on there, but we were looking at some pretty brutal strokes gained approach leading up to the PGA. So if it's an iron type golf course, give me everybody else, give me the field, and I'll just kind of avoid the top range.
It's tough. I'm totally with you that DJ certainly, I mean, the numbers bear it out. He hasn't been himself at all, just pretty mediocre and missed the cut at Kiwa at the PGA. Can he flip the switch? Yeah, he can. There's no doubt. We've seen him turn it on. I'm not stunned that he's here, maybe because he wants to get some reps in. I didn't think he wanted to go miscut at a major to another major. That's kind of a weird turnaround. So it's not that surprising to see him here. I do worry about the form, and that's why I kind of want to talk about the next two. So you've got the two Europeans. Fitzy has won a lot in Europe. He has not won on the PGA Tour. He's usually in the 9Ks, maybe the upper 8s in a major. And Ty Hatton's the similar. You know, he does have a big win at API, good Bermuda player. What do you make of them? Is that where you prefer to start this week?
Yeah. If I'm gonna be targeting anybody up here, I mean, Hattie and Fitzy, I love going to both of them. They're kind of the English, let's just group them by skill set a little bit too. Just great iron players, guys that if that's going to be what I'm targeting for this golf course. Again, if it ends up being bombers, yeah, DJ, I'd feel pretty stupid to not have a piece of him in a top five. But again, it's an ownership thing. And if I'm getting the same ownership on two guys and kind of go a little bit more balanced, if that gives me some access, I mean, I know we're going to go down into the 6K range, which doesn't look all that different from the low 7K range to me in a lot of ways, but we're going to be target shooting a couple of those guys. And so maybe that's why you're going up to 11K, but I don't know. I really like my builds. A lot of my main teams having Fitzy and Hatton, and yeah, they're right around the same ownership, but I don't really care. I think skill set wise and what they give me for the rest of my lineup, I really like going to them first.
Yeah, Hatton was the guy. I'm right now, our premium, I'll tell you what, our premium ownership has Hatton really, really substantially owned right now. And that's a little surprising. I'm hoping he's not that popular because that would be a bummer. But I do like the spot. I think he's built to handle a lot of different types of courses. And because we don't know what we're getting here, that could be really useful. So he's someone that's shown he can win when he gets going. The results have been weird. He's making a lot of cuts, made 6 of 7, but no finish better than 18th. That's a little atypical for him. I expect him to build upon that, and I feel just fine with him, with Fitzy. Last question. Last week we had Kyle Stanley at 6,100. We had Russell Knox at 6,100. You could double up. You could almost triple up. Do you feel the need to try to be aggressive on lineups and have two north of 10K this week?
I think you can do it. It becomes an opportunity cost question. Like, what is the difference? Like, as I'm going through different names, obviously that sub 7K range is just abysmal, but so is the 7K range. And if you're able to kind of pick and choose a couple of those spots, like, it really comes down to the opportunity cost of, like, DJ and Brooks Koepka both finishing top five, or Fitzy and Hatton both finishing top five, and being able to have like one or two of those other pieces just simply get you through onto the weekend, like having a top 30 out of some sub 7K guys. Do you agree with that at all?
Yeah, I think there's certainly one of the things to point out. This is a full field of 156, right. So it's a lot harder to get a random 6K guy through just on that. And two, last week, it was just, as you mentioned, the opportunity cost was minimal in a lot of ways. Here, I don't see it. So I don't think you're getting a ton when you do double up. And I think you're incurring a ton of risk when you do double up on the back end. So that's where I'm at. I'm in line with you. But let's go to this next range. Let's go to this leverage value. Again, you're going to see names in the 9K range where you're just like, wait, what? I don't know, man. Harris English is 99. Sungjae's had a string of bad cuts here, mostly on Fridays, imploding. Tommy Fleetwood, Pulse. Kazire and Higo is 9K. All right.
Yeah.
So go ahead. Take it away. You want to talk about him or anyone else in this range?
I mean, how much Higo is too much Higo this week? I mean, 0%. We're talking to... No, stop it. You're going to play 0%? Oh, yeah, I'm going to play him. Euro special.
That's a no for me, dog. But no, up your boy. He has no face on DraftKings.
Yeah, South African. Isn't he number 50? He's a top 55 player in the world. Not that world player rankings matter, which is a great segue because Osimo does their unofficial world golf rankings, which really, really help you build lineups. I can guarantee you Higo is not 52nd on those rankings, if I had to guess.
Yeah, I would assume not because we know what we're doing. Alex does a great job with them. I mean, this is the I didn't realize that he took down the old Canary Islands championship. Now I'm gonna have to revisit everything. 27 under looked like a real barn burner.
Okay, you're getting a little sassy for, you know, Legends of the Hidden Temple shirt. I mean, you came in strong with that already, but now it doesn't make you better than me. That's me.
I just don't understand this. So the thing about someone like Higo, and I'm gonna make this point when we talk about. I can't say his name because I don't know what it is. John Pack. these guys could be wildly underpriced or wildly like Higo might be the best player, you know, barring DJ and Brooks. Maybe he's that good. Like maybe he's an 11K player, or maybe he doesn't even belong in this field. I don't think we really know that. We've seen him a little. He's been very impressive in Europe. There's no doubt, being serious for a second. I just am stunned to see him at 9K. And I would rather find the money for Poulter, for Fleetwood. I'm not sure I see the Harris English 9,900. I mean, did you see that as a little too premium?
Yeah, that's way, way, way too premium. We had a 13th at the Byron Nelson. Otherwise, no top 20s since the century where he won. But I feel like he's probably the most overpriced out of everybody. I mean, the thing about playing a 9K Higo is that right now we've got him projected underneath 5%. He at least has shown some winning form in Europe. And if a guy can win on a tour, whether that's the Canadian Tour, the web.com or the Korn Ferry Tour now, if you're looking at the Euro Tour, I feel confident in being able to take shots on them, at least having the pedigree to, if they've won recently within the last couple of months, that's a big plus because that's the kind of stuff where confidence can roll over in a weak field like this and kind of be surprising. So I do think I've heard his name around a little bit, at least where I think that ownership might be a little bit more than that. And that would concern me, but considering he's underneath 5% and nobody else in this range is, that's kind of my play for him.
That's fair. I think that's, you know, I have no problem with that. It's a weird range because a lot of times on these shows, we talk about if you don't love the 10K plus options, you know, you can start in the nines, you can build very balanced. Is there a guy that you're like, okay, this is where maybe I want to anchor lineups in the nines, or are you more looking to mix and match in what I think is obviously a pretty weak range?
Yeah. So if I love Fitzy and Haddon, I'm going up to that upper eights. I think there's a lot of things and a lot of talking points that we have at the upper eights that I like a lot more. Keith Mitchell is probably my favorite play on the entire slate in the way that where his ownership is coming in at comparatively. Seaside Georgia guy. I talk about that crew of guys, JT Pasta being one of them, that all live out in Sea Island over by Davis Love. They live on that property out there. I don't know. This golf course seems like it sets up pretty similarly. Par 71, some longer holes, longer par fours. I feel pretty good about a guy like Keith Mitchell going a little bit overlooked. We know that putter can disappear in a flash at any moment in time, but give me a ball striking fest with Keith Mitchell, and I'm pretty happy with that.
I mean, his off the tee game is one of the best in the field. There's no doubt. The putter hasn't been terrible. It's pretty streaky. I'll give him that. around the green is weak, but I could see that being mitigated here. I don't mind it. I certainly think if you want to go aggressive off the tee, he's a great natural pairing with someone like DJ, of course. DJ fits all bolds, we know that, but you could look to him. Do you have anything that you want to mention before we move down in terms of like Tommy Fleetwood or Poulter? Or you're just kind of neutral on those type of guys?
I'm neutral. I know I'm just avoiding responsibility and talking about anybody in this 9K range because I just feel so awful about them. We haven't seen any full any form whatsoever out of Poulter besides 1/14th at the Wells Fargo. I don't really know how that comps to this one a little bit. Like zero. Sung J.M., probably the most frustrating roster in PGA DFS here at the moment. Ian Poulter would be the guy that if I had to take anybody in that 9K range, and you know, I love my boy is Patton Kizzire. I absolutely love him, but because we're seeing him now get into that double digit ownership, I feel like you can take some shots on him. He's probably actually the guy that I feel the best out, but I'm still going to be a little bit lighter on him. Poulter as well, who played well at the Charles Schwab, but it's just not a range that I'm interested in outside of taking one or two shots, and actually probably more than that because I'm sick on Higo.
Yeah, I'm not going to be on Higo. Kizzire, I may buy back a little. I was able to get away from that last week, and that did help at Memorial. He wasn't good off the tee. He still putted very well, and he's someone that can turn it around pretty quickly. I don't really have a ton of interest. I'll probably stick to the Europeans. If I go to this range and I won't be playing Higo, we'll see what that does, chat. Maybe it burns me. I was going to say, wow, great comment from chat. Someone likes my shirt, but it's a man behind the glass. That only counts as a half point comment, but I appreciate you, Mr. Klein. All right, let's move chat to our favorite topic, make the cut. It's going to be some rapid fire. We're going to start throwing names out. We're going to open it up because this is going to be the core of your roster. You're going to have to find these type of players to be in that mid-range. We'll start in the upper eights. You mentioned you like Keith Mitchell already. Right next to him is Alex Noren, who's playing some good golf, definitely a price bump. Then you've got Kisner and Glover. Glover has serious ties to the course. A lot, his name's been thrown out there. Do you read into that, and do you like him this week?
Yeah, I think, again, a ball striking spot. If I'm going to target Keith Mitchell, I mean, him and like we can just correlate those two together right off the bat and build some rosters. Streaky putters, not even Lucas Glover isn't even a streaky putter. He's just a bad putter. I think that's probably true. The right way of saying it. I don't want to oversell him as a potential of being mediocre putting because he doesn't have that. But I knew Alex Noren was going to be the guy that you talked about, so I want you to have the floor about him. There's no way that even at 25% ownership, that's not scaring you off, is it?
I mean, that's, again, ownership in a full field. The ability to leverage against chalk is elevated because the miscut equity is higher for every player, of course. But he's just playing really well. He gained in all four categories in Memorial. He's made six straight cuts, and I've probably been overweight on him in all six of those. I'm not saying I've been getting paid off a ton, but he has been playing well. Now, when you're 8,900, you're not looking for made cuts anymore. Placement points are pertinent. He's got to play better or maintain at least what he did at Memorial, but it's a weak field. I don't mind it. The guy that I do want to throw out there, though, as the complete dark horse is, can you stomach going to Kisner, who has shown basically no form all year?
I mean, this would be the kind of spot where you would want to, and I'm still not going to do it because
Island Mafia, right?
Sea Island Mafia. Let's go. I mean, just loop all the Georgia Bulldogs together, loop all the Davis Love the Third groupies that live out there in Sea Island. Let's just group them together in some lineups in part. And no, let's not do that because I don't want Kevin Kisner in lineups this week.
Don't think I can get, I've mentioned this before, Chad. I've been trying recently, but for a couple of weeks there, I was betting him, trying to leverage like that. It wasn't working. He's just shown nothing. He's really just nothing. There's no form to speak of. So I have no problem with Noren, no problem with Glover. What about HV3, who's also there? Do you have interest in him? Who's, again, he was a runner up earlier this year. He has some upside here.
Yeah, but this is the ownership guy that, okay, I can't play everybody that's popular. I can't do it. And Harold Varner III, I at least have enough caution flags that I'm waving where, you know, I feel like I can get off of this chalk. He's been better in some spots. Like I don't completely hate it. Three straight made cuts. That's a plus. But at 8,500, like he really kind of still has to beat up a little bit on this field. And what's his top 10? Like his top 10 numbers coming in on the books just don't even look that good for me. I don't even want to be betting that. Like the RBC Heritage top two. So that's fine. But God, I just don't want to do it at 25%. I'd much rather just play Noren and move on with my life.
Yeah, so it actually worked out okay for me with Varner. I do like him in the spot, but I bet him. And that helps to take some of that. That's, if I, you know, you can balance things a little differently on the betting card. So if he's extreme chalk, I'm not saying I'm not going to play him in spots, but I may not even get over. And I could be okay with that because, again, when chalk masses in 156-man field, there are other ways to get positions on players. Hatton's a little rusty because of his wedding. That doesn't sound good, but I'm not overly worried. He'll be just fine. I like that guy. So not going to change much there. Moving down to the mid eights. We've got Redmond. We've got Russell Knox. We've got Johnny Vegas. Sneds is also there. Feel free to loop him in. I mean, what do you look at? These are PGA Tour regulars, but normally we find them in the lower sevens, not the lower eights.
Sneds is trending up, absolutely trending up. I go back to it again because we talked so much crap about him at the Valero. We just flat out laughed at him, and he ended up in the optimal lineup. Ended up pulling out a sixth and just going completely nuts on us, making us regret all the things that we said. And not only that, but it started to show some form here of late. One of the best putters on the planet, once he got that starting to go again, took off a little bit. The Charles Schwab might get people where they see the one bad result and freak out. But up until then, three straight top 20s. Zurich Classic, which, you know, we count that if you want to. Valspar and Byron Nelson. I feel pretty good about taking some shots on him this week. And not only just taking some shots, I think he's going to be a larger part of my portfolio because at that low 8K range, it allows me to pair it nicely with Fitzy, with Hatton. I don't have to stress out too much. And it also gets me to avoid that 9K range, which, as we said, is just kind of disgusting. And, you know, it's strange that I like more guys in the 8K range this week than what I do up top.
Yeah, I mean, Sneds is always a volatile player. He's got always higher win equity than the players around him because of the way he plays. So off the tee game is horrendous, but everything else looks good. He's handled. I mean, this is a guy, talk about Torrey. I know that's next week, but like he's not going to mind a long, difficult course. He's absolutely torn that place apart, and he can do that here if he gets going. So I don't mind that. Knox, I don't know. It's a tough one for me. $2,100 price bump is pretty big.
Is that good?
Yeah, I think I'll probably just throw him in maybe some very precise stacks of some sort. Like Johnny Vegas to me makes a good pairing with Keith Mitchell, with those type of players. Again, right. He's been absolutely fantastic off the tee all year. One of the best, if not the best on tour so far. So I don't mind looking at him. Doc Redmond to me, it's a tough one. Don't know what you're going to get, I'll be honest. You have any feel on him?
None. Absolutely none. Not even somebody that was looking. I had to manually import him in my model this week. That's never a good sign.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah, Smiley's here. I wish they did make 5K price tags. But
that's so sad.
No, that would be cool though, because then you could like obviously you can't play Smiley, but if he was like 3,500, maybe you.
I was gonna say. Notice how you started at 5K and now he's already 3,500. Yeah, that's all that needed to be said.
They added salary. Anyone else in the eights? Like I said, for me, just to sum it up, I like Noren. I like Glover. I think that's, and Sned's probably is a wild card. That's probably my three favorite. HV3 is a bet for me.
Scott Stallings. Have we talked about him at 8K? We really haven't. And I don't know. Maybe it's just the journeyman and knowing that he can spike some upside at random times. He got the third at the Byron Nelson. So we've seen some actual upside from him very, very recently. What do you think about Scott Stallings? Because that's a guy who's been showing up in a lot of lineups for me over the last 75 weeks. That's a long time. But just over the course of over a year and a half now, just continually gaining strokes, gained approach. That's kind of his strength. Another iron player that I'm just kind of grouping into strokes, gained approach over the last 6 weeks. That's a much better number. 1.2 per round. I like that number. What do you think about Scott Stallings?
So I definitely see how you could get to him. He's a very good approach player and he's pairing it recently with putting. That's the one concern though. It's a double-edged sword. Like you look, oh, third at Byron Nelson. He gained 8 strokes putting. So of course he played really well. Then that regressed and you get a 67th at Charles Schwab, but it is a class drop for the field. I don't think around the green is going to play a huge role, and that's probably to his benefit. I don't mind it. I will say that a lot of the guys in these ranges are very popular. Scott Stallings is looking sub 10%. So in that regard, I won't need a ton, and that could be appealing, but he didn't stand out really when I was looking at things either. So that's where Matt's probably, because Luke List was right next to him, and that is where we are going to go next. But before I do, chat, it's good to see everyone in the afternoon. Normally I'm very tired because it's late night. They wanted to do the show at like 11 o'clock tonight. That was a no-go. Eric's got plans, big things going on, but it's awesome to see everyone. We appreciate you guys stopping in the afternoon. We have such a full schedule today of NBA content, MLB, all the guys. Eric will be on the tip-off show with Kayla and Greg, I believe. A lot of good things going on. If you can hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, because we don't want you to miss things. I'm certainly going to be putting out football content. Is coming soon. We've got Euro soccer. I know people always say, who cares about that? It's actually really good betting opportunities there, and I will be covering that along with the crew here. We've got some really, really sharp people, Giovanni and Josh and the whole team. So that's what we're going to go, but we have to talk about Luke List. That's what we got to do now. Are you ready for him, for RCB, and for Vince Whaley, who again is just here? Talk about the upper sevens for me.
Oh, easy. You're talking about the guy who has the best recent form out of the entire crew, and you're just going to belittle three straight top 30s?
He's very impressive. He's made, what is it, nine straight cuts?
Nine straight cuts, three consecutive top 30s, sitting at the upper sevens. How can you not like Vincent Whaley this week? So gaining strokes across the board over the course of the last six weeks. Not a single negative category for him in strokes gained. So I don't know how you don't like him.
Well, I think that the price obviously is adjusted.
Oh, you are searching. You stuttered there. You're searching.
The form does not lie. I have no problem. I have no problem with Vincent Whaley, even at like 10%. I think it's fine, but he's starting to be amongst several players that I think are pretty good players, even in a field like this. I got to ask you about Luke List, though. I mean, this is a guy, every week he is gaining tee to green. It's automatic. He's gained eight straight weeks tee to green, but there's a lot of miscuts in there because he loses three or four strokes putting. What do you do with a guy like that?
You beat your head against the computer. And you've been doing it for years with Griot, so you're used to such things. And eventually it happens. Like the weeks that it happens, good things happen. It is really hard to pinpoint those weeks. And so those kind of players, my approach is always play them when they're not popular, fade them when they're chalk, and live with the results, because I don't really know what else to do with them. They have the upside. Like a guy like Luke List, you put him next to anybody in terms of strokes gained off the tee. I just love Luke List as a ball striker, but it's not just bad putting. It is atrocious. As you said, missed cut bad with the putter. So that's like another category. That's the Lucas Glover kind of place. But I can't do it if he's going to be popular. If we see that ownership were to somehow come down a little bit off of like 16 or whatever it's at right now. Yeah, 16.6% our last run of it over on DraftKings to let you all know that. I got to be light on that because there's other places you can go in this range. I think even RCB, he started to show a little something here of late, a couple top 40s. I mean, making cuts, that's an improvement off the doubly more popular Luke List. And that's just kind of the way that I feel about it.
I like RCB a lot this week. Is there risk? Yeah, of course. But he's starting to show form long term. He's a very good player. He's played in Europe a ton. I do think that helps. Seen a lot of different types of courses and whatnot. And I think this should fit his eye, his ball striking. It doesn't look good in the short term, but I think there's quote unquote bad data if he's turned a corner. He was just lost for a while, and he strung together three consecutive good showings, positive tee to green in all three. So I can get there. Martin Laird is kind of interesting. I don't know what exactly to do with him. He gained 11.5 strokes at the PGA. Was not good at the Memorial. He did make the cut because he putted. I think I'm probably leaning towards passing, to be honest. I don't know if I'll have room, but there are flyers here if you don't want to go to Whaley, if you don't want to go to List.
Yeah, I'm going to Whaley. I'm going to RCB. This upper 7K range I was talking about a little bit earlier, other than Luke List, who is just way too popular for my taste at that top end, and the volatility that he brings is certainly there. You have the six at the Wells Fargo, but everything else kind of garbage. But Martin Laird, I'm basically playing a Euro Tour event this week, and I'm really hoping so at that 9K range. And just the way this golf course sets up, and maybe this is also just me having good vibes from playing RCB in some European contests back when he was finishing top three and just about all of them over in Europe. There are a number of times I feel like this is the kind of golf course, just even looking at it a little bit, where he's played well at in the past. I have a good feeling about that for him. Kind of the same way I feel about Martin Laird, but as you said, a little bit more data driven, where that strokes gain approach, I just model my guys with irons here in this spot. And the way that I really want to focus is just strokes gained approach over the last 6 weeks, 2.7 plus. That's fantastic. I love it.
It's a good range. The mid sevens, I think, is loaded with some guys. We mentioned them. I'm just going to throw a couple others out as we work down. It's all some of my favorites, but they are playing good. I like Ben Martin. I think that he's taking advantage of some of these starts. His ball striking has been good. I like Seamus, my man, Seamus Power. EVR is there. I'm not super sold on him, but Seamus is playing good golf, took advantage of a top 10 at Byron Nelson to get in this field. Are any of these guys catching your eye? You've got some of the Europeans are here. David Lipsky, even though he's an American, he plays over in Europe. Uline is here. Someone named Valko Niemenbayer, or whatever this guy's name is. What do you do in the lower, as we work down to the lower 7K range?
What if his mom was watching this show? She wouldn't appreciate that very much.
At least he got a shout out.
The guy has been working so hard on his golf game every day since he was a child, and we have no idea even how to say it. I don't care. That was fantastic.
He literally drives it like 400 yards.
He does. He hits it very, very far. Seamus Power is my highest owned golfer on the entire week. So there's that. 7,500. Yeah, no, am I bad at this? I think I'm okay at this most of the time. So 7,500 is Seamus Power. This is just the way that I'm looking at it for this week. I don't think driving the ball in play is going to be that big of a deal. Like, I think there's a lot of room on this golf course. Like, there's a ton of room on this golf course. And if you tell me that I can get Seamus Power to do anything whatsoever off the tee on planet Earth, a guy that over the last 6 weeks losing almost three shots off the tee, like egregious bad for Seamus Power. He does everything else, not just at a good rate. He does everything else at an elite world level rank, outside of punting, which can be spotty, but strokes gained approach 2.8 over the last 6 weeks, almost four strokes gained tee to green. That's just an amazing, remarkable number to be gaining up considering he's losing almost three off the tee. I don't know. 7,500 is a number where I've kind of landed on with a lot of my bigger builds where I need a lot of him. And he's kind of the guy I'm making my stand with. I don't want to go to Bo. I don't want to go to Vaughn Taylor. I don't want to be playing a ton of EVR who, you know, look at his strokes gain approach. I can't, I just won't do it on this golf course. Curious if you have any thoughts on EVR whatsoever, other than don't play him. But I keep landing in this range. And if it's not going to be Peter Uihlein at 7,300, who I just has shown a little bit of form in the last 4-6 months, I think Seamus Power is going to be one of the higher owned dudes that I'm going to have this week.
Listen, I'm going to be with you. I'm definitely getting over. EVR made it into the US Open. I don't know. Part of me thinks he's very underpriced, but he's just been bad for a while now. And I don't know if that's the case. Like I said, Ben Martin, Seamus, Lipsky's playing pretty well in the Corn Ferry when he's gotten opportunities. I don't hate that. You're not going to need, should he be a core play? I would say probably not. But if you want to put him in the pool, that's totally fine. And then it starts to really drop off for me. I don't see a ton. You've got like Scott Piercy down here, Duffner, Tom Lewis, Davis Thompson. Like you're really starting to reach, and we're not even in the sixes. I mean, I think that mid sevens is much stronger than the lower sevens. So I'm going to try to find that extra couple $100.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. God, I can't believe I feel for whatever reason. I mean, just take it to the bank. Seamus Power is going to play fantastic on this golf course this week.
Okay.
He's going to. That's I maybe it's a hot take. I don't know. His ownership would say that it's kind of a hot take, but probably my favorite. So other than Keith Mitchell, probably my second favorite play in this entire field relative to ownership.
And that's the thing, you know, when we talk about this, if you like these guys, you know, you like Hatton and you like Noren, there's nothing wrong with that, but you need to find your Seamus and your Lipsky and your some of these guys that are not popular, and you say, okay, if I hit this and then the chalk hits, now I'm cruising. Because if you pair up the chalk and you don't have one of those guys, you're just going to get boxed out. So that is something to look at. I'm going to be there with you with Seamus. I don't think I'm going to have as much as you do, but
yeah,
definitely getting.
I'm surprised. Yeah, I'm glad you're on board with that. Because
if we're just going to this guy.
Okay. I didn't know that. We've never actually talked about him. He's a guy that I'm pretty bullish on. If he could ever figure out, I thought he had the driver shanks when I was looking through his through a couple of his tournament history. I was legitimately curious if he just couldn't hit drivers.
Yeah. Sheamus is someone, like I said, I've played a lot in the past. I do think there's enough names where I can diversify a little, but he's making the most of his starts. You know, he's focused. I like it. So, but now we're going to go a little lower. We still have some time left and we're going to talk about these 6K ranges. We'll talk about some bets. We'll talk about some hot takes, but the name that is floating around here as we look to the upper 6K range is John Pach. We've got Hank Lebioda as well. We've got Robbie Shelton. There's a bunch of names that we could get into, but I want to talk about this guy on his own. He's a Florida State guy. A, what do you know about him? And B, are you interested in playing him?
I know he's making his pro debut this week. Yeah, I know that he finished fifth at the NCAAs last week. I know that he's looked pretty good in the number of things that we saw. I know that he won the Ben Hogan Award. I know he won, what's the other one? The Fred Haskins Award.
Yeah, the Haskins,
that's the big one. And Jack Nicklaus Award, which goes in there too. The Haskins, what do you love about the Haskins? It's just a fun word.
What do I love about it?
Yeah, I thought you were saying Haskins with it.
I said Dwayne Haskins. They're going to rename it.
Oh, they are. Interesting.
No, that's not true. That's the old Ohio State quarterback.
Oh, okay, there you go. The
Washington football team.
Why did my brain not pick up on that right away? Yeah, the third string Ohio State quarterback who ended up being the starting quarterback in the championship series. That was nuts.
But yeah, this kid's got, I mean, again, do I follow college golf? No, but I know enough that if you're racking up those awards, you're a pretty damn good player. It's just a simple fact of, you know, I'm not going to go on a tangent, but I think guys like Morikawa have really hurt some of these players because everyone is just like, okay, are they ready to just win? And I don't know if that's a fair assessment. Maybe he's that good. It's just very difficult to know.
Yeah. And Hovland, look at Matt Wolf now too. It's you for every Victor Hovland, you have a Matt Wolf. I mean, same exact golf Justin team, Sue. Same exact year, Justin Su. Oh my God. Yeah, it's kind of difficult to know. And we're seeing some guys come back to life out of that kind of, you're seeing a little resurgent from, who's the Texas guy that I'm just thinking of that gets played every single week at mass ownership. God, I can't even think of his name right now. Somebody in chat is going to come within 5 seconds. So I'm not
too
concerned.
What is the question? I'm sorry.
Oh, the guy from Texas, he's chalk every single week. He's the guy who had the blow up at TPC Sawgrass in the final round. He's chalk every single week. God, he's from Illinois.
He's
originally
from the University of Texas, or
played at the University of Texas.
Scotty Scheffler?
Nope, not Scotty Scheffler. Different dude.
Dan Fratelli, Jordan Spieth, Bo Hostler.
Nope.
Bull Hammer.
He was the most recent
Doug
guy.
Gim.
Doug Gim. Thank you.
Chad,
thank you, everybody. So Doug Gim, the Gim Reaper, comes out, and that's kind of more the comp where I think you're going to have some growing pains. Now, can he come out of the gate really hot? You know, Sahith Theegala is another guy I thought would come out of the gate hot, you know, considering he just dominated everything down here in Southern California. And of course I'm biased because everybody who dominates down in Southern California ends up being a good player, it seems like, between Canley, between Xander, between all these guys. But then you do have your Bo Hostlers. You do have some of these other dudes that kind of have these crazy amount of growing pains, and whether or not they come out of it or not is a very difficult question. So yeah, 6,900, take a shot or two on him, fine. But oh my goodness, if you put him in a main lineup, I have no idea what you're doing.
Yeah, listen, I take a pretty general philosophy with these guys where I think a lot of people tend to chase. This guy might be good, and I may actually throw him in the pool a little bit, but I don't know how you hone in. And yes, thank you, chat, for Doug Gim. I was not thinking. I was in
I thought you were going to have it in like 5 seconds. It was like on the tip of my tongue, yeah, and I couldn't do it.
I'm going to talk about Hank Lebioda instead of John Pach. Hank Lebioda is playing really good golf. +6 with the irons and +4 with the irons in his last two. He has two top 20s in his last three. Certainly better fields than this. He's a Florida guy, Florida State alum, which again, is that the same as South Carolina? No, but it's kind of close. So can't hurt. He's certainly familiar with Bermuda, and he's a good price. You know, we see Hank Lebioda in the sixes in stronger fields. So I don't see why he can't compete here. Tyler McCumber is right next to him. I have seen his name thrown out there. Cole Hammer is a player who certainly has some pedigree. Now we're getting to the deeper dives. Is there anyone you want to talk about? Like I said, last week was so unique with $6,100 players being mega popular.
If you want to get disgusting, take a shower disgusting, you could play Luke Donald this week. Top 15 at the Byron Nelson. I don't know why I would want to play Luke Donald, but he's somebody that I had circled who was popping up in my model and made me have to question reality itself. I had some interesting guys that were coming up to the top of my model this week. I will just say that's the kind of week this is. If you're not going to be playing the top end dudes, it's going to get uncomfortable. And if you do want to be jamming in two guys over 10K, it can also get uncomfortable. Luke Donald, at least seeing one good result. The guy, we know he was former number one player in the world, has the ability to go on a run. We've seen two of his last three cuts made at least, but top 15 at Byron Nelson. Why not take a shot here and there for a guy that we've seen be a good iron player over the course of the last six tournaments, over four games, four shots gained approach. So there's at least something trending up for him. Putting's been pretty flat off the tee. Not good, but put him in a group with a bunch of other guys who aren't necessarily, if I'm going to play Seamus Power, maybe taking a shot or two in some large field GPPs on Luke Donald.
You really are sticking to the theme that you could get away off the tee this week. Yeah. I mean, Seamus, Brant Snedeker, Luke Donald, Kazire, these type of players, they're not going to be able to survive if it's very rigid off the tee. Now, if you get it right though, what an advantage, because you remove that. These are some of the most undervalued players in the field. So again, it's just where on the wavelength are you in that philosophy? We had a question from chat, Tatted Grizzly, which is a cool name. Thoughts on Pat Perez as a sneaky play? I think that's absolutely fine. He's sub 5%. He's immersed in all the flyers that we've talked about. Pat Perez is making cuts on tour. He's certainly got upside. I don't love the course for him, I'll be honest, but if you want to go to him at 77, I say more power to you. I have absolutely no issue with that.
I like it. Camila Vijegas is probably somebody that I'll take some shots on too for $100 less. I think I've brought him up probably more times than he deserves on this show, but I think that he just constantly shows me that he can get in those top, he can get in the mix a little bit here and there. Weaker field event. Both him and Pat Perez, I have no problem going to either of them.
No, no doubt about it. So again, a full 156, you have a lot of opportunities here. It's very 6-6 is going to be low. It's difficult. You can mix it up here. All right, as we move to the betting card, I do want to say also, we've got some free tools for you today. We've got NBA ownership rankings free. We've got MLB Top Stacks, which is one of the strongest tools in any sport that we have. Absolutely fantastic if you play MLB, if you're playing some baseball. And then we've got PGA rankings. So come and check that stuff out. There is no better time to get inside the ropes here at Awesomeo. We've got the US Open on deck. Even if you come in for the week, we are running promos, PGA strategy show. You get 15% off for a new sign up on that Platinum Weekly. Come on in, no better time to do it. So if you have any questions, you certainly can reach out to me or Eric. You follow us on Twitter, we'll point you in the right direction. You get in Slack, you have a good old time, because we're making a lot of bets in there as well. Do you have any favorite bets of the week? I know you're part of the expert panel that does give the bets each week, our article. We have some fun with that. What are you looking towards this week?
Yeah, I throw my bets in when I'm not, you know, on a runway with a possible plane about to eviscerate me into a million little pieces. Yeah, so those are the times that I do. I have a three ball that I'm looking at, a threesome, okay, if you will, that I really like this week over at, at Schmoyntz Schmidt, which we have a lot of promotions with, a lot of good stuff that you can check out on the site. I think everybody got the idea of that one. I think, did that come through craftily enough? Minus 113 Alex Noren. Normally you see a number like that, three balls, threesomes, you're looking at like, you know, plus 150 on the number of monies. But look at these other two golfers that he has paired with, JJ Spawn and Jin Jun Zhang. Like, I'm going to take Alex Noren at minus 110. That's basically like betting an NBA game just on the back and forth with those guys. I love Alex Noren up against both of those two. I have no idea what the other two are doing in that three ball, so I'm absolutely targeting that on Schmoyntz Schmidt. So check that out. That's probably my favorite bet of the entire week.
Both of those guys, I will say this, you know, Noren's Noren and he is playing well. Zing Zun Zhang is really struggling. He has been for a while. JJ Spawn is not much better. He has shown a little form of late, and I always thought that he was a better player. I think injuries have really cost him, but it's few and far between. I don't mind that at all. It's not one that was on my radar, and that's the beauty of this. Now I'm going to take a close look at that and possibly add it to the card. I think, you know, for me, looking at, you know, go to the top 10 market, things of that nature. I talk about this, me and Josh Engelman, we certainly have our PGA contenders video where we get into some of our favorite bets. and whatnot. But I think this is a tournament. Of course, it's fun to try to hit outrights, but you can get pretty wide with your card this week and take a lot of flyers on some of these guys. I'm just going to throw a couple names out there. I know you like Sheamus. Let's pull up his odds here when I have it right now. You know, for top 10s, you're getting decent numbers on this guy. Yeah, 8-1 for a top 10 on him. Like, that's not bad at all. Ben Martin is in that range. There's just a lot of players. Yeah, Ben Martin, 6.5-1 for a top 10. I think looking to a couple, you only need to hit one or two, even if you bet a handful. I'm going to pepper those on my card. I don't do that every week. This is the week, though. I think the 7K range in particular, a lot of names that correlate well with those top 10 type finishes.
And I'm going to ask you this because I guess I don't know the answer and I like to humble myself a little bit. So what I've been trying to figure out what to do is with a guy like Keith Mitchell this week, who doesn't have the best top 10 odds in the entire world. He's 40-1 basically around the industry. How do you go about trying to capitalize on a bet with him? Obviously I'm going to have some DFS exposure to him, but if a similar player or skill set like that, like how can I basically build around him rather than just taking an each way on him? Or is there like a specific one, top five, top 10 that you would want to be betting more than that? Cause 40-1 doesn't seem like a number that I really want to be betting. He doesn't have to win for me in DFS to really go there, but seems like some of those odds, like, would you just kind of avoid it altogether? Or like, how would you approach basically handling like somebody that you're already exposed to in DFS?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. And it's something that I don't think has a particularly a set answer. But the way I like to do it first is to A, check their ownership, because if they're going to be really popular, you can up the kind of volatility because you're willing to sacrifice, like, you know, Kyle Stanley last week and whatnot. But if they're not, and Keith Mitchell is not going to be like mega chalk, in my opinion, I think you can open it up to even like a top 20 and you give yourself some room and you're just kind of an extension of what you're doing. Cause when you get into DFS, you know, the placement points, you can outscore them. And he's such a good scorer that for betting, that doesn't help you, but for DraftKings and FanDuel and those sites, it really can. He could come in 40th, but have the 13th most points. So that's something to keep in mind when you're looking at, you're just kind of trying to paint a picture of, where is the most likely outcome? Is it going to be placement points driven? Like, for my opinion, Sneds, he's always a better bet than play in general, because when you get him right, he tends to actually finish really high. Rarely does he make, you know, birdies all over the place, but he doesn't show up like that. That's just not his nature. So I think that's a long-winded say of it does depend. But with Keith Mitchell, I have no problem with him really in any format this week, particularly if you think his off the tee game can carry him.
Okay. Well, yeah, I've been trying to figure out, because I feel like I've been on the short end of the stick, kind of what you were earlier with Griot at the RBC. You know, for me, it was Louis at the PGA. And I don't know if I necessarily built my card well enough to like capture their upside. I have them in DFS, obviously, as well. But trying to get better at targeting, because you can't bet across the board on absolutely everybody. That's not something that's going to be profitable long term for me. But trying to pick and choose which of those guys I'm going to be betting across the board, being, you know, each way's top five, top 10, top 20. You know, I want to be targeting one or two of those guys to be doing it. I've been contemplating what to do with Keith Mitchell if I want to be doing that. So, yeah, I think you probably talked me into it now.
Yeah, no problem with that. Honestly, it's just, you mentioned it. You don't want to go too wide with these guys, because then you can, it's just like DFS, you can end up breaking yourself and whatnot. So keep that in mind. And certainly on the betting front, we will have you guys covered. A lot of content there. All right. Final thing, you know the drill. Hot take time. You got a hot take for us from Wisconsin, I almost said. From Wichita, from the clouds here?
Well, from the clouds. I mean, for me, I almost, it's like, oh, the rain dance kind of a thing. Sheamus Power, top five. How we doing this week? Sheamus Power gets in the mix. I'm not going to bet him outright because, again, I'm going to have a ton of him in DFS at 7,500 over on DK, but I want a top five. I feel like a lot of my hot takes have been extremely, extremely hot on this end. Damn. We're going to go for a mild tempered one before we go a little nuts at the US Open.
That's fine. I have no problem with Sheamus. Like I said, I've mentioned him in betting, and I honestly would love to give a crazy hot take as well. I just don't have it. I'm going to look to RCB in the market. He's sitting 12-1, upwards of 14 at certain books for a top five. He's just another name that I think you can look to. He's someone that, again, in Europe, when he was playing better, he was competing amongst fields much stronger than this. So when you get in that situation, you're talking north of 10 to 1 on these guys. They're worth a play in the betting market. So hopefully we can hit a few. We'll see what happens. Again, it's a wide open week. That's interesting, but it's also very difficult in some mind. But we will be back next week with the US Open. We'll be returning, of course, to our normal time. We'll keep you posted of any changes. Any final thoughts here before we bounce out for the day?
Oh, this was a blast. Again, money spends the same, whether you win it at the US Open or whether you win it at, you know, the middle of nowhere. So I feel really good about the work that we've done here. Best of luck to everybody. Check out the contenders video that Ben does with Josh. That's always a great spot to really get you thinking about the betting card, how to round it out for the week. Something that I've been trying to work on in my game, because that's basically, I came from a golf betting background first. That was my initiation into everything in the early 2000 or the early 2010s. And I just want to keep getting better at my game there. And hopefully you had a couple of things that stuck with you here. And if Seamus Power plays like crap, I can't wait to hear from all of you.
Hey, that's nature of the beast. But if anyone has any questions, like I said, get in Slack. No better time to do it. And of course, we will have you covered. So good luck, everyone. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the tournament. And we will see you guys next week for the US Open. Yeah.